Welcome to episode 10 of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to give animators 10 words of advice from an animation director.
Schaefer Creative is a product of my family of six, all of us pursuing careers in film or the arts. This is our place to showcase our art, document our growth, and share what we learned. We hope you'll find value in learning from our artistic convictions, our mistakes and successes, and the guidance we share as a family. In the Conversations with Creatives edition, I invite my friends, colleagues, and heroes to talk about their craft, their education, and professional life in their art. I'm animation director Todd Schaefer, the father, and your host on this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast.
Very often when an animator comes onto a production for the first time, he or she is coming into absolute chaos. And we assume that the animator has certain practices as part of their workflow that we expect them to be doing. And they've never been told or shown how to do certain things. And in this episode, I just want to go over 10 things that I think are critical for animators to have as part of their toolkit of things that they do on a regular basis or things that they think about as an animator to be practical in their craft. The first thing every animator should do when they come onto a production is to find the script and read it. Read the script. There has been a lot of work put into that script, a lot of thought. It's been through many hands. Many years usually have been spent agonizing to get the script to the place where it is at production. You want to know what is in the script. The script will give you the setting, the themes, the characters. You need to know what is going on in the script. And after reading the script, you need to review the storyboard and watch the animatic, because the storyboard and animatic are fleshing out the director's vision of the script. And so often you'll find that certain flavors and certain things will be adjusted in the animatic from the script, because the filmmaking process is not just about copying exactly what is in the script. There is a cinematic approach that often takes precedence over the written word. So you want to have these things under your belt. And if you see any differences between the script and the animatic, that's a point to bring up for review so that you understand from the director what is expected and why the change has occurred. Because everything you know or understand from that vantage point will help you as you come into the show to create the performances needed. Second, you need to find all the references and become familiar with them. There will be references from the director, model sheets, character guides, character notes, backstory. You need to know what the props are so that if you have a scene that involves a prop, you have an understanding of what is expected from the prop, because often whatever is handed out to you may not include that information. Same with the environment. You want to get as familiar with the project and the work that's gone before. Anything that could intersect with what you have to do as an animator, you need to have a grasp of it. It's your job to own your work, to own your shots, your scenes. Just like an actor, you need to know the requirements that are expected of you, and you need to know the environment in which those things need to be played out. And you cannot expect everybody to do their job the right way. The director is probably overwhelmed and overworked. Same with the supervisor. They've all got a lot of things flying in many different directions. You want to help them by owning your shot. And when you see differences and you see things that have been overlooked or you see things in question or wonder, you go to the director or supervisor and you ask questions about what the materials are that were given to you or may not have been given to you, just to make sure you are doing your job. Own your scene and everything around your scene as much as you can. Third, be aware of your hookups. You always need to know when you have a shot, where are you coming from and where you are going? Where is your character coming from? Where is your character going? Where is the place that your shot lives in the sequence of shots that are before and after. So don't just look at the one before, look at three or four before. Know what's running, what it's running up to. Know where things are going to be going, because sometimes you might be tempted to do something that would have an impact in a later shot. So you want to know what's going on in that later shot so that you can adjust yourself and make sure you're either not doing something that's being saved for later, or that you're setting up something that is not going to pay off later. Always know the nature of your sequence, what is going on. Ask questions if you have to. Fourth, be careful what you do near the cuts. The audience needs about 8 to 12 frames to register something. If you make a big change in the on-ramp and off-ramp zones, as I call them, the audience will miss it. And whatever action you put there is going to look like a mistake. You're going to lose readability and comprehension. And it's going to make the edit look like the edit was a mistake. Give yourself enough time to do something before the cut or after the cut, after the shot starts. So be very careful in that first second or last second before the cut or just after the cut of what kinds of big things you choose to do there. Make sure it cuts well into your next shot or coming from the previous shot. Number five, thumbnail your performances. Thumbnail your performance. Even if you can't draw, you can draw stick figures. You can scribble out something in order to help you think about how you're phrasing your action to tell the story. And you have to go through this process, some sort of preliminary process, to think through your action so that when you get to actually animating the scene, you're not wasting time and pouring all that energy into something that is going to be corrupted and end up carrying forward or influencing what you're doing. You want to start with a clean slate as much as possible. When a painter is painting a large painting, he does sketches before he gets into actually putting paint on the larger canvas, because he doesn't want to have to work out his problems on the canvas, because it kills the freshness of the paint. The same thing is true in animation. The less you can work something, the better. As soon as you start working something to death, you got lots of problems. Don't immediately jump into the animation. That's the worst thing you can do. You need to think about and plan your performance. Think about the acting. Think about the motivation. Think about what gestures and silhouettes you can use in order to enhance and communicate carefully your scene. If you're not doing that, your performance will likely be overworked, uninspired, and cliche. Number six, play to the camera. Your work must reach the audience. And it's surprising that I have to say this. If you're an actor, you know where your audience is on stage. If you're on set, you have a camera and crew behind it. As an animator, you have the benefit of knowing what your end product is. You don't have to guess what the audience is seeing or what the camera is seeing. You have it right in front of you. And because we work in pantomime and silhouette, we have a control that no actor does. There's no excuse for us not to work to camera, because we see the camera all the time. It's immediately available. We can look at it. We can think about it. We can plan for the composition. And there's no excuse for 3D animators to get this wrong either. Even though they live in this virtual world of animation, you have the camera that you're working from, and work to that camera. Even if the director says he might adjust it here and there, forget that. You have a camera that is set for your performance, and you work to the camera that has been given to you. Plain and simple. Now, in 3D, you move all these other cameras around to help you do this or that to see your character. Don't bog yourself down into the minutiae. 3D is not a virtual product. It's a 2D product. The final result that you're working for is a 2D image, and you have the camera. Now, if the director adjusts it, that's a different story, and the director has that right to do that. But you work to the camera that was given to you. And if you think there's a problem with it, you go talk to the director. Six, act. Act. You're actors. Animators are actors with pencil or mouse. Animators, and especially 2D animators, spend so much time developing their drawing skills, they don't spend enough time developing acting skills. We think about motion, we think about weight, we think about physics, we think about overlap and follow through, all of the principles of animation. We often don't spend enough time thinking about our acting. We are ultimately actors, and we are called upon to produce a performance of a creature or character who is living and breathing, who has emotion, who is thinking, who is giving a performance worthy of the camera, worthy of being in front of a camera and then shown to an audience, worthy of all the millions of dollars that are being spent in this production. You're an actor. You have to give good performances, and you have to speak the language of performance and character. Take an acting class. Read books on acting. Stanislavski, Sanford Meisner, Stella Adler, Michael Caine, I mean, you name it. Find some acting books. You don't have to necessarily go out and act, but you should be familiar with what's actually happening in an actor's mind, how they produce performances, because you are the same thing, even though you're not physically in front of the camera. There are lots of online classes that you can take acting lessons from. Masterclass.com is a great resource. I mean, they have classes being taught there by Dustin Hoffman, Kevin Spacey, Helen Mirren, Samuel Jackson, and they're constantly adding to those are great. Great places to start to be thinking about acting. You need to learn how to act. So as much time as you have spent learning how to draw, learn how to act. 7, don't be stingy with your animation. Don't be stingy with your animation. By that I mean, don't be so afraid to spend the time to commit yourself to your performance because you think, well, they're going to change this. They might change that. They're going to give me a note here, and I'm going to have to throw all this out. It's all wasted. It's not wasted. Do you understand? And when an animation director throws out your work or changes something that causes you to have to throw out large amounts of your work, that is not a waste. That is part of the creative process. It's a stepping stone. So that you're learning your character, because you may not understand what the requirements are for your shot or your character, and the director is trying to guide you to where you need to be. And he's often reacting to what you do. A lot of animation directors, including myself, we want to work with our animators. We want to give the reins over to our animators so that they have fun and joy and feel the freedom of producing imaginative performances. It's like a director hires Robert De Niro. They don't hire the guy who's their next door neighbor. They're going for Robert De Niro because they know Robert De Niro is going to be thinking about the performance and giving something unique to the performance. And we don't want to micromanage an actor's performance. And animation directors don't always want to micromanage animators' performances. But often we do when an animator cannot bring to us what we need, when they struggle to get the basics of the requirement of the scene down, we're left having to micromanage bit by bit by bit, often hoping that the animator is going to see what the problem is and make the adjustment, but often they don't. When you get into a situation like that, please do not become timid in your animation. Keep giving it your all. Throw in your whole heart. Give us your gusto. We want you to be sold on your performance, because when you're sold on your performance, that is more exciting to us when you're actually communicating that performance and delivering on it. 8, eyelines. Eyelines are so important. An eyeline is simply the line of sight that the character is making either to another character or in relation to the camera. One, we want to be able to see the eyes where it's necessary, which is almost all the time. So keep your eyelines in a place where you might have to cheat just so the camera can see your eyes, even though they may not be looking directly at the other person in the shot. Sometimes you have to cheat those eyelines. Always think about where's the relationship of that eye line to the camera lens. And you want to keep them consistent, especially when you got a reverse shot situation. whether it's a two shot or reverse shots, you want to keep the eye lines consistent. You don't want to shoot one character, two characters who are talking, shoot on one character. They have a close eye line to the camera lens and the other character has a wide eye line to the camera lens. Those things don't hook up. It doesn't feel like the camera is placed in the middle of them. It feels like the camera's jumping all over the place. It's an eye line jump. Be cognizant of where your eyes are looking all the time, because that's the first place all the audience is looking at the eyes of any character. Keep them in focus. Number 9, focus most of your attention on the character's eyes. As you're animating and doing your performance, the character's eyes are essential to everything. Even if it's a big pantomime section, the eyes are giving us a lot of information. Eyes are the window to the soul. And eye movements are very simple things that help us to know your character is thinking. Eyes form thought, and they lead the body in action. So pay attention to your eyes. And finally, 10, there's something called the successive breaking of joints. And what that means is that when a character, let's say a character is standing and he starts to move in a walk, very often, we will animate that character leading with the head. The head leads and turns. The neck then turns. The shoulders then move forward. And then the hips follow and then the legs follow. That's a successive breaking of joints. Sometimes a character will be very hip heavy. And so he'll lead with the hips. And so he'll swing out the hip and everything else follows. In that case, the hip will start. Then the knee follows to the ankle. And then from the hip up, you also have the hip coming first, the bend of the back, the shoulders then turn, and then the neck follows, followed by the head and the eyes. And that's like a character who's dragging behind. He's got his body moving forward without looking where he's going, but he's sort of dragging behind sheepishly or whatever the situation might be. Always be thinking about what part of the body is leading the other part. That will help you with the successive breaking of joints. If I'm going to lift my arm, the first thing that often moves is my shoulder, and my elbow follows by a few frames, then my wrist will follow, and then the digits of the finger will follow. Think about that all the time, because one of the mistakes of younger animators is to do everything at the same time. The whole body stops at the same time. The whole body starts to move at the same time, and there's no leading of any of the joints. Everything's moving at the same time. That makes your animation look robotic and wooden. It's soulless. It's not a living being that has loose joints. It's a very tight, rigid kind of thing. Always think about what joints are moving ahead of other joints. What are the leading joints and what are the following joints? And that is going to set your animation apart from 80% of the animation that's going on. So those are 10 tips, 10 words of advice to animators. And I hope you find it helpful. Looking ahead on our podcast and our upcoming episodes, next week I'm going to be wrangling my family together and we're going to be talking about where we are creatively, each one of us, and what we're expecting to do in the new year. This will give you a context of what you're going to be seeing on Schaefer Creative in 2019. In our Conversations with Creatives editions, I've got Michael Greenholt coming up the following week, the first week of January. That's going to be followed by John Ebersberger, who's a painter. We've had a lot of animators on Conversations with Creatives recently, but we do have other artists who are going to be coming up who are not in animation. And John Ebersberger is a good friend of mine, and he is a wealth of information, and he is so entertaining to listen to. I can't wait to get to that podcast. And I also got Mike Suri coming up. Disney animator Mike Suri. Hakuna Matata, Mike Suri. Looking forward to that. It's going to be a podcast you will not want to miss. That's it for this edition. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Schaefer Creative Podcast. You will find show notes for this episode and more information about Schaefer Creative at schaefercreative.studio. Music is by Lee Rosevere.